Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of November 22nd, 2019. The top 10 Democrats in the still-growing 2020 field were on stage for their fifth debate. We look at what happened, whether the debate moved the needle for anyone, and what it all means for South Carolina now that we're less than 100 days away from the February 29th primary. We recap the Atlanta debate with Meg Kennard of the Associated Press. Interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, so please holler at us or slide into our DMs. Also, make sure to check out last week's Trailbite, where I had a one-on-one interview with former Vice President Joe Biden. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can also rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of wondering if saying OK Boomer at the Thanksgiving table is going to cause some sort of ruckus with your aunts and uncles and grandparents and mother and father. Okay, just don't say it, guys. I don't know. Say it. Just say it. Let us know what happens. Tell us what happens. I mean, I know I'm going to. Or wondering about how Squidward is getting his own Netflix spinoff special. So deserving. But he is a little angry all the time. But who can blame him? He lives between SpongeBob and Patrick. So he's kind of all of us these days. There you go, King. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that the State Law Enforcement Division has finished its review of Emmanuel AME Church finances and found no evidence of wrongdoing. State authorities last month chose to investigate the church's handling of millions of dollars in donations that poured in after a racist gunman killed 9 black worshipers gathering for their Bible study in June 2015. Concerns over the church's handling of those donations emerged soon after the shooting. Number two, the Post and Courier reports that South Carolina's unemployment rate reached another all-time low of 2.6% last month. This, according to the South Carolina Department of Employment and Workforce. The state's jobless rate has dropped almost a full percentage point since June, and the current figure is 1% lower than the national rate of 3.6%. The hospitality industry continues to lead the state in job growth with a net gain of 8,000 jobs since last October. Number three, WPDE reports that Horry County has lost its only medical helicopter service after LifeNet in Conway abruptly shut down. The closure is worrisome to local emergency officials, especially those on the South Strand, who now have to transport patients by ambulance to Grand Strand Medical Center, a 40-minute drive from places like Litchfield and Pawleys Island. The closest helicopter is now 30 minutes away. And number four, the Post and Courier reports that all four University of South Carolina trustees who voted for former West Point Superintendent Bob Caslin as president are seeking re-election next year face opposition. One trustee who voted against Caslin also has challengers in the election by state lawmakers. Opposition of any kind for college boards is rare. Three other USC trustees are unopposed. Lawmakers elect college and university trustees in South Carolina. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, just a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida Man arrested. Claims wind blew bag of cocaine into his car. Wait, hasn't this happened before? Windborne cocaine is a danger, guys. Just like the stuff that washes up on the beach, too. And just like the Greenville News and Florence Morning News showing President Bob Caslin the receipts following his accusation that the papers twisted his words over his support for football coach Will Muschamp, we bury the lead. There are 17 Democratic presidential candidates vying for the party's nomination. 17. Only four of the candidates are regularly polling in double digits in early voting states. Nevertheless, there were 10 candidates who made the cut to participate in the fifth Democratic primary debate last week in Atlanta. We look at some of the highlights and what it means for South Carolina now that we are less than 100 days away from the primary. To do all this, we brought in Meg Kennard with the Associated Press. Meg, welcome back.
Hello, good to be back.
So, Meg, just so people kind of understand what you do, obviously you're based here in South Carolina, but you're a national political reporter for the Associated Press, which means you cover huge national stories, mm-hmm. especially those that have South Carolina bent. But for you on debate nights, that means you're part of a team that really kind of helps dissect, helps break down and understand what's going on the debate stage. So whenever there's things happening, you guys are kind of all there picking and choosing who's going to go after what mm-hmm. and what news is coming out, because there's so much, and that's the benefit of having a big team like the AP.
It very much has to be a team effort for us. We have people on site at every debate. So for this one, we had people in the hall in Atlanta, but then also there's probably about a dozen other reporters who are all around the country doing exactly what I was doing, watching the debate, listening for interesting back and forths or topics we want to make sure to pull out issues on, and then writing something on it.
What were some of the things that you had to write on pertaining to the debate, and maybe were those also big takeaways at the same time?
We're always looking for big issues at this debate. Certainly there was a conversation on Medicare for All, mm-hmm. so I wrote something on that, as well as Me Too, which is a topic that hasn't come up as much lately since there have been so many other things, but that has been an undercurrent for a lot of these campaigns, and so there was a conversation about that. Also climate change, which has come up in every single debate, and certainly in Atlanta was at least a conversation. It wasn't the main part of the conversation in the debate, but there was some back and forth, particularly between Vice President Joe Biden and Tom Steyer on that issue, as well as paid family leave, which mm-hmm. we hear in South Carolina. That always is something that many of the candidates are bringing up, since it is they get asked about it in town halls here. And it certainly came up at the debate. And then also an exchange between Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He's leading in some polls, and we were kind of waiting to see at the debate if some of the candidates were going to go after him, since mm-hmm. he is in some places the front runner. And that certainly was a conversation about experience or the lack thereof. And that was another piece that I wrote about as well.
Yeah, and you talked about Medicare for All issue. That's obviously so much like part of the campaign trail. We hear so much about people being kind of for or against it, but it didn't really blow up on stage last night. I think we were really hearing a lot about when we're talking about Medicare for All, it didn't blow up into the issue that it's always kind of become on stage, because there was a lot of conversation about the impeachment going on there. Was that surprising to see that they didn't really get into the weeds as much on Medicare for All?
Healthcare reform and what to do with the lasting effects of Obamacare, whether to get rid of it or whether to, as Joe Biden would like to do, improve upon it. That's come up in every debate. But in Atlanta, there was some conversation about it, but it really wasn't as big a part of the debate as we've seen it before. Essentially, in this instance, there was a back and forth between Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders primarily, as we've seen. I mean, those are the three who topped the field in many places, and so that's not surprising. But two of those candidates are certainly on the side of let's implement a more Medicare for All system mm-hmm. and let's kind of start over and implement a single payer system. Joe Biden, as is not a big surprise, continues to say, well, let's improve upon the system set up in the Obama administration, obviously, of which he was a part. So that was primarily kind of where we went with that. And then that was it. And then the mm-hmm. moderators moved on to other things. There have been so many conversations about health care. So I think that the Atlanta debate was a situation where they wanted to bring in some other issues and really make the best use of the 2 hours that they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we did hear from former President Barack Obama the other week talking about voters don't want to tear down the system and remake it. And mm-hmm. that was a question that kind of went right from the moderators to Bernie Sanders. And Sanders didn't jump on Obama, of course, because that's not advantageous to anyone to do. But, of course, kind of respectfully disagreed because of his plans, and they're so progressive. And it's just interesting to see kind of that moderate versus progressive debate that we've kind of been seeing play out throughout the campaign mm-hmm. trail. I'm wondering, do we see any clarity there? I mean, I'm guessing people are getting a little bit more idea of who stands for what, but I'm just wondering, what the appetite, at least in South Carolina, is for those big ticket issues.
I think that some of the concern that comes on the part of voters is the price tag for mm-hmm. a lot of these items. And that's something that Joe Biden, in his opening remarks, when asked about Medicare for All and what to do with health care, he did note the price tag. I think he overinflated it a little bit, but certainly talking in the trillions of dollars that it would take to put into effect some of the changes that Elizabeth Warren wants, for example. So the price tag is a concern. Sometimes when I'm out on the campaign trail talking to voters, they will say, look, these ideas are great, and we're glad to see some specifics in terms of how candidates propose to pay for things. I mean, for educated voters, that's certainly something that they want to hear. They don't just want a pie-in-the-sky proposal that sounds nice. They want to think about the economics behind that. Mm-hmm. And now that some of those economics are starting to come into play, there are more pointed questions from voters saying, okay, well, what's that going to mean for my bottom line? Is that going to mean higher taxes? Is that going to mean money going away from other programs that I might support? So we're continuing to see voters certainly voicing concerns, but also just asking for more information to back up a lot of the things these candidates want.
And just to touch upon that, because you brought up a point I want to make, is we saw a CBS YouGov poll recently come out that had Biden at 45%, and then also his support is very strong, too. A lot of those people are not going to budge, according to what the poll found. But it's interesting because 42% of those who were surveyed of South Carolina voters have questions about the cost and details of Medicare for All. So they're not really sold on it. They're saying, okay, well, maybe, but depends on the cost and the details. And then 13%, I think, were kind of just flatly opposed to it. So it goes to show that, yes, it might sound good, but it's also raising questions for people who are trying to figure out, okay, well, how is this really going to get implemented and the cost of it?
Absolutely. And that's something that you see Vice President Biden, but also in the Atlanta debate, Senator Amy Klobuchar was one of the voices talking about the funding of these proposals and saying, well, on certain issues, like for her paid family leave, I proposed 3 months as opposed to 6 months because I'm concerned about how much it would cost if we went for a broader timeline than that. So some of the less progressive, perhaps more centrist candidates that we're seeing are having a vibrant conversation with voters about saying, look, I understand some of your concerns. And if, you know, you might support some of these proposals, but be worried about the cost, well, let's try to talk about that and find somewhere that would be more feasible.
And you wrote on that, you were talking about the paid family leave right there. And you mentioned earlier that that was a big point for Senator Kamala Harris, too, to really kind of sell and also appeal to black voters, black female voters, which we know are a huge part of the Democratic base, especially in South Carolina. Did she kind of score some points there in the debate when it came to kind of connecting on those issues?
That's something that Senator Harris is very vocal about, especially when she campaigns here and talking about issues that are important to women and specifically black women for sure. And at the debate, that's something that she really took the opportunity, frankly, to remind voters this is really just one piece of a much larger focus that I have on issues important to women. I am a woman, obviously, but I'm taking seriously, you know, the details that I see, like women are having children later in life. And so perhaps we need to offer a more extended period of time to get used to that. And she really kind of went in and expounded upon some of her reasons behind wanting to shore up policies like paid family leave. When she's campaigning in South Carolina, her most recent swing, she's spending a lot of time with women and black women, particularly. As she has noted, black women are the most reliable contingency within the Democratic voting bloc, other places, but also here in South Carolina. And so she really is putting her money where her mouth is. I mean, obviously, she's a black woman herself, but she also is proposing things that she sees as focused on that community and offering an opportunity for them to kind of have a voice in how she's framing some of those proposals.
And we were kind of expecting everyone to really pounce on Mayor Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, Indiana, because he was really been surging in the Iowa polls and he's been gaining traction. But it was interesting because, you know, the first half of the debate, everyone was really kind of going after President Donald Trump, talking about impeachment stuff, not really going after each other or even the front runners in that regard. But we did see kind of some back and forth with Pete and some other candidates, especially kind of thinking about what was going on with him and Amy Klobuchar, both Midwesterners. She was really kind of bringing up his experience only being, you know, a mayor of a somewhat small town. I guess, what, 100,000 people?
I believe so.
Know? So I guess that's medium size. But also, you know, he also got kind of his digs in there because he said, you know, I'm on stage here with people who have about 100 years worth of Washington experience. And what have they done? So he was ready for it. We also saw that the Republicans were ready for everyone to go after Pete, too, because the Trump campaign, the Republican National Committee and the Black Voices for Trump sent out emails attacking him on race and his record in South Bend, per Axios. So everyone was kind of ready
for that.
That's right.
They were ready.
And he was ready, but it didn't seem like anything happened, even when they kind of set up a quote for Kamala Harris to kind of go after him.
Yeah, that's right. Senator Harris and Mayor Buttigieg really did have a bit of a back and forth that continued to, frankly, into the next days after the debate, continued to be a part of the media conversation, seeing, you know, how did this all fall out and where do we go from here? But the conversation that occurred really in and around race issues was something that I think when you're in Atlanta, when you've got John Lewis sitting in the front row of the debate, you would imagine that, you know, dealing with racial issues is going to be a part of the conversation. And it was. But, you know, some of the framing of the conversation with Mayor Buttigieg about, you know, he discussed some of the struggles that he feels that he's experienced being a gay man. He mentioned being married. And he often talks about those things as part of his identity. And so it makes sense that he would come up during a debate. But then kind of the attempt to frame that and contrast that with struggles in the African-American community, that was something that didn't really develop into a big conversation in the debate, but did continue in the days after to come up in media interviews with Senator Harris in particular, who seemed to, she said that it had been a bit, you know, misdirected, I think was the word that she had used.
About the stock photo controversy, the photo of that woman from Kenya on Mayor Pete's website dealing with you know, just a generic, here's, you know, basically a generic black person stock photo, and then kind of blowing up. And they asked her about that, and it didn't, she didn't really hit it too hard, and she kind of, I don't want to say went soft on, but just said,
She didn't swing away at it, which I think, I'm not speaking on behalf of the moderators, maybe they were anticipating that she would do that or trying to set up a different kind of conversation. She didn't really take it there, but she did talk about it in days later. And, you know, that's something that the Buttigieg campaign has always been upfront about, that, and he has talked about it and did at the debate himself. You know, I'm still trying to get to know black voters and still trying to introduce myself. And he will be spending more time, I'm sure, in South Carolina with black voters doing exactly that. But it really will continue to be a conversation on behalf of his campaign for sure.
So looking at who spoke the most during the debate, Senator Elizabeth Warren really dominated the beginning, but also the entire debate. She had 13 minutes and 24 seconds, kind of tied for second and third are Biden and Buttigieg. Biden with 12 minutes, 37 seconds, Pete about the same amount, and then Sanders, 11 minutes, 43 seconds. Booker about 9 seconds left than that, less than that, and Harris 11 minutes 22 seconds. So it's interesting to see that Cory Booker had so much time to get in there, considering he was all the way at the edge of the podium, at the stage, like behind Tulsi Gabbard, Congresswoman Gabbard, and even at the end, he was just like, "Yeah, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna be here in December." It's like
he did make a plug for the things he will need to get over those thresholds for the next debate. But Cory Booker is one of the candidates who's been in this race the longest, and he has continued to maintain a presence in all of the debates. But really, frankly, he is not where he needs to be on the next round of stages. But he did get into a lot of conversations and insert himself into some debates to remind people that he's still there. And that he is in the Senate and he does have a lot of experience and all the reasons that he would want people to support his candidacy. But it is interesting to think about the front runners, the people that we would assume are going to be taking the most time and get the most questions, and then look at someone like him who is frankly a lot further down in the polls, but yet is still maintaining a high visibility in a 2-hour debate like this one.
Yeah, especially when, you know, he did get a jab in there towards former Vice President Joe Biden talking about, you know, Biden was earlier calling marijuana like a gateway drug. We need more studies about how that could be an issue if we were trying to, like, you know, legalize it. Biden for decriminalizing it, getting people out of jail that have marijuana offenses. But Booker just kind of going right into him asking him, like, you know, were you high when you said this? And it was just like, whoa, okay, like, you know, fascinating. But, like, those are the kind of things you have to do when you're in that bottom tier and you're trying to get some airtime and just trying to make splashes so people remember your presence.
We saw some jokes. We saw some affability. And frankly, I think that sort of gives a bit of a window into the tenor of the whole debate. There were some skirmishes. There were some confrontations like we've talked about. But overall, this was not a knockdown, drag-out brawl.
Yeah.
We still have a lot of time for that to happen at further debates, and I would imagine that we will. But in the very beginning, as you noted, there was a lot of going after President Donald Trump and not each other. And that continued to be kind of a tone, really, for the rest of the debate. Sure, they have disagreements and sure they pitted each other, you know, on certain issues. But overall, the Democrats in this race continue to try to show themselves as the best candidate to take on Donald Trump. That's really what they're vying for. And so, again, we had another debate where that was pretty much the overall theme.
And with that, you know, we're going to wrap up a little bit. But, you know, it was interesting because that CBS YouGov poll did, you know, kind of going back to beating Donald Trump and trying to take on Donald Trump. That's a big thing when we talk about electability. And again, Joe Biden's name is always at the center of that conversation. And that poll basically said one of the top words to describe Joe Biden is safe. So, I mean, that's just kind of going back to what you're talking about. But also, when we look at, you know, the speaking time, I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren because she did speak the longest during that debate with 13 minutes, 24 seconds. She had the ability to really kind of get all of her talking points in there, which is what you want to do during a debate. You want to be able to be concise, impactful, and really get your message across. And I mean, if you've been to any of her rallies, you're like, okay, these are all talking points I've heard on the campaign trail, and she's managed to get them concise and, and out there. And one of her big messages that she got to tie in was one of her anti-corruption messages, and she got to tie that into, you know, I'm not going to let anyone become an ambassador just because they write me a check, really referencing Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was just up on Capitol Hill testifying about the impeachment inquiry.
And, you know, I think of all the candidates, we really heard most of Elizabeth Warren's stump speech, which we've all heard out on the campaign trail many times by this point, but she really did take the opportunity to get as many of her points in. And that's all these candidates do that at debates. They will sort of answer a question, sometimes directly answer a question, but mostly sort of answer it and then pivot on, into speaking about an issue that they wanted to make sure to address for that particular evening. So we did hear that from her, but she took an opportunity to be topical and to talk about, to really directly reference the impeachment proceedings that are happening and to make an argument that, sure, yes, I would like you to elect me. I would like to go against Donald Trump, but there's also an inquiry going on that could perhaps take care of him also, you know, on its own. Mm-hmm. And that was another way for her to dig at the Trump presidency.
And then we did see some other one-liners and some flubs. Senator Harris did say Donald Trump got punked by North Korea and compromised America's ability to provide a check on North Korea's mm-hmm. nuclear program. And then also we saw Joe Biden kind of have a flub when he was trying to talk about, like, you know, his broad African-American support and saying what he had support from the only African-American mm-hmm. woman elected to the Senate. And Kamala Harris was like, knock, knock.
Right.
There are two of us and it wasn't
right.
me. And I'm wondering, like, you know, when we look at Biden, he just turned 77 that day, too. And I'm wondering, do people, I mean, it kind of gets chalked up to Joe Biden being Joe Biden. And that's something we've always known about Joe, who has these moments. I don't think it really cost him much, but I think it just was maybe a little stark reminder when you have people like Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who doesn't miss a beat when he speaks, and mm-hmm. then you have, you know, a variety of other people speaking the way they speak.
It can seem a little jarring when you're expecting someone to come off with a whole lot of polish and they have these little flubs. But to be on that stage and to have a million different facts piled mm-hmm. into your head, I can only imagine what that would be like.
I mean, you hear me talk. I can barely do it in the studio.
And they have a lot more practice at this than we do. So just imagine what kind of experience mm-hmm. that would be. But yes, we heard one of those. I ask voters about this a lot. You know, do you see age, but do you also see just any of these flubs, quote unquote, as a concern mm-hmm. in actually selecting Joe Biden potentially as the nominee? And the short answer that I hear is no, that they do still revert back to what you were mentioning from polling numbers and that he is a safe choice. They see him as a good bridge between the Trump presidency and whatever comes next. Mm-hmm. As we've talked about, I asked him directly if he would consider serving one term and being a one-term bridge to that next generation, and he said no, as you would imagine. But still, voters are looking at Joe Biden. They feel safe. They do feel like they understand where he comes from. And so I think they're willing to give him a little bit of a write-off in terms of small things that he may flub up on the stage.
All right, Meg, well, I appreciate your recap there. We also want to say happy Thanksgiving to you since this is the
gobble,
week of
gobble.
Thanksgiving. Favorite Thanksgiving food, Meg?
I mean, for me, it really has to be dressing.
And just to clarify, that's not the
dressing.
Same as stuffing.
Stuffing is inside the turkey and is gloppy and gross. Dressing is crispy on top and more delicious.
Mm-hmm. Going to go with green bean casserole here. Yeah, you know, don't
that's
at me.
That's very basic, but what do we expect?
You said you liked it too.
I did.
God. Yeah, never to appear again. Thanks, Meg.
Thank you.
Basic, but what do we expect? It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020-related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Leading off, former Vice President Joe Biden continues his dominance in South Carolina, according to a Quinnipiac University poll. Biden has the support of 33% of likely Democratic primary voters, while Senator Elizabeth Warren receives 13% and Senator Bernie Sanders gets 11%. 18% of likely voters are still undecided, and this comes from polling conducted between November 13th and November 17th. They surveyed 768 likely South Carolina Democratic primary voters with a margin of error of 4.8%. Charleston Mayor John Tecklenburg won his second term in a runoff against Councilman Mike Seekings. Tecklenburg won with more than 60% of the vote. Speaking of mayors, Columbia Mayor Steve Benjamin said he would endorse former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg if he jumps into the 2020 race. This according to the Columbia Free Times. Bloomberg has filed paperwork to get on the Democratic ballots in Arkansas and Alabama. Those are Super Tuesday states that vote 3 days after South Carolina's February 29th primary, which he doesn't plan to run in. That's some mayor and mayor action in our campaign trail. In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia? Russ, welcome back. We missed you in Spartanburg. It was very tricky up there. AT did the best he could do. I got a lot of hand signals from the audience, which was helpful. I don't have them right now.
Now that you mention that, there seemed to be some understanding about the term lint heads, what you were reporting in Spartanburg. That was one of the possible answers on one of the trivia questions.
Yeah.
Correct. You are familiar with that term.
Something dealing with the textile industry. That's all I got.
Exactly. That was a somewhat of a derogatory term that was put on poor mill workers back in the day when they would do an 8, 10, 12-hour shift at the mill, and they would leave and their heads would be covered with lint.
Ah.
And it became a kind of a derogatory term that was used for, you know, Southern white mill workers at that time.
Hmm. The more you know, now I know.
So it's not something we made up.
No, yeah, I had textiles in my mind, and then I'm always thinking about textiles.
But this week, we'll kind of get back down to the level that you're used to working with.
Outdoors.
Right, exactly. And I know there was lots of recent discussion, a lot of squeamish discussion about snakes.
Whoa! Oh, yeah. So, the snake alert. Yeah, we had that.
So to get back down to the level we mentioned, what is the state reptile?
Oh, gosh. I have not been flipping through my manual lately. All right. I think I'm just going to clear my mind and just let you talk here, Russ.
Your choices are the spotted salamander, B, the loggerhead sea turtle, C, the eastern coral snake, and D, the Carolina anole lizard.
I think it's spotted salamander.
One of those is the official state reptile is named by the South Carolina General Assembly.
Yeah, we have got one of everything. Yeah. Can I phone a friend? Can I phone Rudy Menke? I'm just thinking back because I've if you get the legislative manual, the South Carolina legislative manual, it has everything in the back, like back 20 pages of all of our state things, state mm-hmm. beverage, milk, duh.
Right.
State.
Right. State dance.
State dance.
State
the
dog.
Shag. Yeah. Boykin.
State bird.
We did that one with the bird. Tea kettle. That's all I remember. But I think just flipping through that, what I'm getting at, state tartan. We have a state tartan. Mm-hmm. When I was flipping through it, I feel like I remember seeing the spotted salamander.
Well, you probably did see the spotted salamander because that is the state amphibian.
Oh, God, they're not reptiles. Oh, we're going to get so many letters. Oh.
The official state reptile is the loggerhead sea turtle.
Wow, I thought that was something else. Wow. Don't move the nest, people. Turn your lights off.
Well, we'll give you a chance to redeem yourself.
Oh, Jesus. A double?
A double. What is the state insect?
Oh,
And this ought to be pretty easy. A.
No CMs.
Carolina wolf spider.
Oof.
B. Praying mantis. C. Palmetto bug.
I wish.
D.
State bird.
Mosquito.
Jesus. You said there's a spider in there?
Carolina spider wolf, the praying mantis, palmetto bug, mosquito.
I think it's the praying mantis. Yeah.
That's great.
Order! Zen!
Yes, thank God, I redeemed myself.
The official state insect, as recognized
prayers.
By the South Carolina General Assembly, is the Stagmomantis carolina, otherwise known as the Carolina mantis or praying mantis.
Wow, we got our own praying mantis?
Mm-hmm. Native to South Carolina and considered to be a beneficial insect because of other insects that it
Yeah, unless
eats.
You're the mate of a praying mantis. Yeesh. The palmetto bug needs to be something, but that's for another legislature to decide. So, all right, well, thank you, Russ.
Sure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday. On Apple Podcasts, search us easily on your Android app, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. They're everywhere, guys. You can find them anywhere. Like Pokemon. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address and we'll send one your way. It's like the cheapest, Christmas present you can get somebody. This is all you got me was a sticker? Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Associated Press. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on November 21st, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Chemtrails are made of tryptophan. Gobble, gobble.